Accession number 16727, the Reverend J. Brooker, final reel 8.
Reverend Brooker, Reel 8. You've now joined the 7th Armoured Division. Do you recall what happened to you then?
That's the only thing I can think of. We must have gone to Wiat from there prior to going over the Rhine with them. We stayed there for about a week. I'm lost. And we there from Sittard, we went up to Geilenkirchen with the 7th Armoured, and we were there a little while. I don't remember too much about it. I do remember being with the tanks in the town, and we were there as well, and that the Germans reckoned they'd overrun it, and we were still there. I can remember an occasion, too, when a shell burst and a tank got in our front garden. Didn't touch me at all. Force went the other way. And I can remember at that time being headquarter company commander acting for some reason. I don't know what happened then, but there was quite a few letters to write which hadn't been done to relatives to give them the doings of what's happening. And then
to cope with a large number of letters like that, it must have come a pretty pat letter. Yeah.
Oh yes, it had to be in that case, because I mean, a headquarter company was what, twice as large as any other company, you see, because so many cooks and everything else. And I can remember the sergeant major not being happy because I had to make it a pat letter. But I mean, you've got to work to do as well at the same time. I wasn't happy about it myself, but it was the only way to do it. But it's this business of the cards arm up we were with at one stage. I can't remember where that was. It was then we moved on to Wiat, where we rested, I think, for about 7 days before the crossing the Rhine. We crossed the Rhine on a Bailey bridge, you know, doing the pontoon bridge.
Were you under fire, or was it unopposed?
No. I don't remember. But then, of course, the tanks had probably gone in front of us. That's what it was. We were following the tanks behind then. And I remember that's when things began to hot up a bit. Was it Bocholt? You've heard of Bocholt? Went through Bocholt. That was pretty bad. We came across a German officer school somewhere. You remember that? Oh, you know. It's just come back to me. We had a tough time there.
These were pretty young cadets that you
were. Yeah, they were. And they were
fanatical?
They were. Yeah. We were about that after that.
How old were they by now? You'd be meeting quite an age gap within the German force.
We started that at Arnhem, Nijmegen. They were boys and old men against us there. When we, of course, obviously the crack troops had moved somewhere else, no doubt, because they'd held. And it was beginning to be like that. Boys and, teenagers and older men, 50s and 60s, that we were meeting then. Bocholt, there was another place, I can't remember the next one.
The Germans fighting quite fiercely, were they at this point?
At times, but at times then they were withdrawn, and we'd make a move up. Then we got to a place called Wildeshausen. That was a bad time for me. John Mogg asked me to go and check the exchange to see whether it was, you know, working or not.
Is this a civilian exchange?
Yeah. And I took a DR with me, naturally as cover, one of my dispatch riders. And we went into the exchange and checked over, and it seemed to me as if it was no problem. And I don't know what happened there, but he was carrying a Luger. And I think he must have spotted something. He had lifted the Luger up. As he lifted it up, of course, hair trigger right through the leg. I got it.
Through your leg?
Yeah. So that was my war more or less over. That was 2 weeks before the war finished. So I went back to, where did they transfer to us? It was a long journey back anyway. I finished up in a hospital in Louvain. And I was discharged on VE Day. I went to Knock for Belgium for
How long were you in hospital?
Only a fortnight. It was only just a bullet hole, you see, and it would sooner heal up. Went straight through.
Are military hospitals as regimental as they sometimes say they are?
They weren't in ours. Oh, dear. We turned it upside down. The officers and that ward. We had a Canadian there and a couple of others. We had some fun with the sisters there. Well, of course, they weren't called nurses. They were nursing sisters, all of them. I remember tying one sister up to one of the twins beds, you know, with the pulley beds. She was Scottish, but she didn't mind. They were good. They looked after us. And some of them were pretty bad, and I felt sort of guilty about being in there because funny thing is, when I got back to the unit shortly after the Twins, they were at Itzio then. And of course, as you know, the Germans initially surrendered to John Mogg and around that area, and eventually it was arranged. Anyway, when I got to Itzio, I found that he'd received it from another one in his. So it was, you know, not that it mattered, it was an accident. It was fairly obvious. I mean, he thought he'd seen someone, and he was going to lift the fire, and as he brought the gun up, so it went through my leg. I called him everything under the sun.
Well, after the hospital, you rejoined the unit?
At Itzio. It was only just a little while after the war.
What?
And I found out, strange it may seem, that when I got there, that my kit had been riddled with shell holes, shrapnel. And I wonder whether that was something that I might have been in my bedroll then. Funny, the signal truck and I could have been in it, possibly, and finished up in the wrong place.
How did you celebrate VE Night?
We went down to the local officers' club. I won't tell you anymore, but they were lined up all along. I can remember trying to find my way back to the hospital. I was being discharged the next day, you see. This was VE night, the night before VE Day. I was being discharged the next day, and I couldn't find my way back to the hospital. Eventually, I found me there. And one of the sisters gave me a sedative, go to bed, and sleep. Next morning, I woke up with a terrific. Oh, terrific hangover. There were two of us going to Knock. We had to go via Brussels. We went to one of the leave hotels in Brussels, ordered ourselves lunch. Neither of us could touch it. Oh, it was terrible. But, by the time we got to Knock, we were neither of us in a fit state to sort of enjoy VE Day. We'd had enough time the night before. And of course, there was Of course, you went in and you were wounded doings. I mean, They didn't worry how you got your wound, but you were wounded, and of course everything, tots of whisket, lined up by the dozen. Of course you couldn't say no, you had to drink them up. But there it was, that was VE night, when we knew about it. And as I say, the day where I don't want to spend another VE day like it. Anyway, we were there, I think, I don't know, about 3 weeks, I suppose. I can't remember. And by then, as I say, they were at Itchio. I managed to fiddle myself onto a draft going out to them. And that was it. I got back and they got a young chap trying to do single officer. But he wasn't much good, so they sent him a brigade, promoted him, sent him a brigade. I got my job back straight away.
The German civil population, how are they treating you?
Well, I found the German population as such quite nice, and I think they genuinely didn't know what was happening, some of them. And we found that we weren't supposed to fraternise, but you had to a certain extent. I mean, I had to, because there were places where I was in charge of the local exchange as well. But I found them quite nice. I think they were relieved to get rid of the Hitler and the Nazis. I'm sure they were.
Were the Germans giving themselves up still at this stage, the SS and that kind of thing? Did you get involved with those?
No, I didn't. No, that was mainly military police and things like that.
So what was the role of the battalion, and you've mentioned your own with the signals, in this German place, German town?
Well, it's how I get the impression we were waiting, after having waiting to go into Berlin, and that's when we did, and that was a nightmare. I've never known a convoy of vehicles travel so fast. I was driving 90 miles an hour, trying to keep communications going on that journey. I don't know how fast they were going, but I was trying to get up and down that dunes. If a company got out of communication, I was driving over 90. My poor sergeant, he was hanging on for dear life. I've never driven fast like so fast as that before. 93 mile an hour I was doing up the motorway. Of course, there was no other traffic on, just us. And of course, we were going through Russian-held territory, going to Berlin, so you can depend on it. We weren't going to waste time. That was a convoy, that was.
Memories of Berlin?
Quite good. We were stationed at the school in Berlin, in West Berlin. I can remember going sailing with one or two others. We had a chappie from the Navy had joined us by then. Been transferred from the Navy for some reason, and I don't know. And he used to sail, so we went on one of the lakes and played a lot of tennis, belonged to the tennis club there. What else? Oh, of course, we had VJ Day while we were there. Our battalion took part in the parade with the Russians and the Americans.
This was the big Berlin parade.
Mm-hmm. VJ Day.
Were you on that parade?
I wasn't on it. I was watching it. I'm glad I wasn't on it.
How did the DLI pace fit into the other slower moving?
Oh, they fit it. They did the same pace as the others. I mean, a lot of them were like myself. We hadn't got up to the DLI pace. I remember the colour party there. That was friend Halliday. He came, I think, from a Yorkshire regiment, because he was a Yorkshireman. He was eventually the adjutant as well. He was carrying the colours, and they were marching just the same as the rest of them. We only had a colour party in, I think, our own person, because this was the trouble, being light infantry. There was no room for a light infantry detachment there, so we didn't take part as such. Eventually, of course, we came out of Berlin. They replaced us with an ordinary infantry regiment. Then we moved down to a place.
Was this parade an international one?
Oh, yes.
All the Allies.
Oh, yes. The French, the Americans, the Russians, and ourselves. Because we had the Malta Brigade with us there, still, as Dorset's and Hampshire's. And so they. Oh, no, I don't know whether it was, whether we went in as a brigade, as a division, or whether we went in as a sort of composite brigade. I don't remember now.
Who was taking the salute?
Oh, I wouldn't know. I can't remember. I know I was in a queue of jeeps, nose to tail, at the side.
Whilst you were in Berlin, what were the duties of the battalion?
Oh, guarding various things and trying to keep the peace, I suppose, and all that sort of thing. We didn't do too much.
What did the place look like?
It had been knocked about a bit, but generally speaking, it wasn't too bad. The Unter den Linden was, and the Brandenburg Gate was all in one. It was a bit more knocked about in the Russian section. So I remember being stranded in the Russian section. I was friendly with the signal officer of the Dorsets. We'd been to a course at Catterick together. Ronnie Hayes, as his name was, he'd done beach duty on the landing, and then he joined the Dorsets and became their signal officer, and I got very friendly with him. Now, why am I telling you this?
We were talking about you got stranded in the Russian sector.
Yes, now I've got it, yes. Yes, and I don't know what happened. We had reason to go into the Russian section. He had a truck and I had my jeep. And my jeep backed up in the Russian section. Unfortunately, he was coming back on the other side of the road. I thought to myself, what am I going to do? I was on my own too. Anyway, I stopped him and he gave me a tow. And it seems that the cylinder block had gone. Wouldn't believe it, would you? Cylinder block. But he took it into his battalion and got it replaced for me, put it back to normal.
How bad were the conditions for the civilians in the city?
Oh, I think they were a bit short of food and things like that. But generally speaking, they didn't seem to be. I mean, we weren't interfering with them. I think things went, I won't say they went normally, because they can't under those circumstances, but as normally as possible.
Were you still not supposed to fraternise with them at this point?
Well, we did. I can't remember whether we weren't supposed to, but we did. Our biggest problem with the Russians.
What problems did they give you?
One was always half afraid of the Russians were going to get out of hand or something like that. You couldn't trust them. That's how I felt, anyway. I don't know what the others felt.
And your role was, again, communications with the whole of the battalion?
Yeah.
In the usual way?
Yes, I didn't deal with any outside communications then. I was just keeping the battalion in.
Did you get involved in protecting any of the war criminals in the prisons?
No. That was done by, obviously, the military police, I would think. No, we just sort of occupied the doings, and that was it.
How long were you in Berlin?
Oh, dear, I don't remember.
Were you still...
Well, we went in shortly after VE Day. It must have been about a month after VE Day. We were there at VJ Day, so that's what, May, June, July, August. I think we were about maybe 4 or 5 months.
And were you still with the battalion when it moved on to its next
place? Oh, yes.
Place? Yeah. Where did it go to next?
Near Bonn. And we went out of the 7th Armoured, into the 49th Polar Bear Division. I always remember their write up, the battalion, crack battalion coming to them. We weren't so happy as all that, but there we are. And I think we finished the war with the Polar Division.
You'd be losing men because of demobs, were you? Were they happening then?
No, they didn't start until we got to the to them. And then I think the demobs started. It was round about that time when we were on. Well, it wasn't Ham, not Bonham. Was it? Can't remember which one it was now. We were a little place just outside. I know I was responsible for the doings at the town. They used to go in the town every day to check on everything, see if everything was going all right.
It's from the communication element. Again, were the population okay? Friendly enough?
Oh, yes. Yes, they were quite friendly enough. Of course, by then, you see, the commission, the... what do they call it? The civilian commission, our own people, you know, that won't go in and organise things.
The civil authority. I'm
trying to think what it was. Yeah. By then they were doing, and they employed a lot of Germans.
Had you heard of some of the atrocities at this point, Belsen and places like that?
I think we must have by then. Yeah. I can remember. I've just remembered too. There was a, whilst we were at Sittard, there was a mine disaster. We took over the communications for that as well. Quite a few miners killed. I think it was a Sittard. Yes, I'm sure it was before we went to Berlin. It wasn't after.
How long were you in Ham?
Can't remember. About getting three, into 3 months, I think. And then we went to another place. Can't remember where that was. That's when I was demobbed from.
You were demobbed from Berlin?
The other place.
Berlin.
Not Ham.
From Germany.
Place. Oh, yes, I demobbed from Germany. Via...
What date were you demobbed?
It was May sometime. No, it was on leave until July.
46,
yeah. Sometime in May. Did about a year after the
day. Did you fly out from Germany to wherever you came to?
Oh, no. By road to a German barracks. And there by road, and came over on the boat. And then we were taken to Aldershot. And demobbed the next.
And demobbed from Malta. Yeah. What was the process of demobilisation?
A bit hectic. Well, a bit hazy to me. I can't remember too much. I remember going in and getting my demobbed papers and everything else, and signing something or other, and then going into the clothing department to get myself a demobbed suit, which was not much bigger than a rag, you know. They weren't very quality. And then getting on the train to London.
Looking back over the war itself, the Germans seemed to always seem in certain elements of their equipment and weaponry always seemed to have that the better gun, the better tank. What was the most feared weapon for the infantryman or weapons?
Well, there was the 88 millimeter. Gun, and there was the Smyser pistol. I used to carry one of those. I captured one. Well, I didn't capture, picked it up for a while. And then there was the machine gun. What the dickens is that called? But it was the 88 millimeter, the anti-tank gun, and all that sort of thing, and the big shells that were, I think, the biggest problem. And that machine gun, what the dickens they call it?
Were there any particular weapons of your own, you know, the British that were you considered of as high a standard as anything they had?
No, I don't think so. They weren't so accurate and they weren't so fast. I don't think any of ours were. But I'm only talking about infantry weapons. I don't know about the others.
What was the most difficult spot you were in? A dangerous spot?
Oh dear. I reckon that being dropped in the Russian zone. But I don't know.
Was Normandy worse than Germany in the fighting stages?
Yes and no. It was more sustained. But when we went over into Germany, I mean, that business with the Gazettes, German Gazettes, was... I don't know. I can't say. It's all so hazy.
In the heat and danger of battle, shelling, whatever it is, was religion a strong force in your survival?
In mine, yes. Now, I'll tell you something now. I didn't think of it at the time. But I have always believed, and I do believe, that I was saved through the war, from the war, to do what I'm doing now. Looking back, I've mentioned one or two incidents where it was a bit dicey. No, I think the worst place was shelling in Normandy. When you're in an open field and you're getting shells coming over from all over the show, and you never know when your name's on them. I think that was the most dicey as far as I was concerned. And shelling on the Maas Canal.
And you pray at that point?
You always do. You always do. I can remember many a time, and Don Taylor will tell you the same thing. Before there's been a battle or anything like that, there's been other denominations, not Church of England, other denominations' service, and we have had to stand at the door because we couldn't get in. And officers usually get the front, as you know. That's how it's been. Oh, it's there in the troops. I'm sure there were many a prayer on D-Day before. I'm sure there must have been.
In a peacetime situation, those men probably didn't go to church or
temple. No, this is it. And, you know, I can quote so many little incidents. I can quote one case early in my service when I was with the Royal Fusiliers. We'd been on a route march and we'd got sat down and got our feet up out the way. And I can hear men whose language is certainly not drawing room talking about Jesus Christ. You wouldn't have thought that, would you? That stuck in my memory for a long, long time.
Would you say that Jesus was on the battlefield?
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Because it must be a point like that that really stretches a person's beliefs.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
The horror and the massacring and the killing, the blowing up of bodies. Uh-huh. And you feel that it was still there.
On the battlefield, but not controlling it. This is what a lot of people think. They don't realise that God, yes, he's omnipresent, he's omnipotent and everything else, but he doesn't control men's minds. It's men's minds that cause all this, doesn't it? People say, why did God allow it to happen? He doesn't allow it to happen, but he's there. I remember hearing in Scotland, because I've preached at a lot more Scottish churches than I have English churches, Church of Scotland, when I was a short time I was up there, and I can remember the Lockerbie do. Because we lived in Lockerbie, not at the time, I'd moved from Lockerbie to Sanker then, but it was where we lived where that fell. And I preached in that church. I don't know whether you saw that service, lovely church, 200 and more at a Sunday morning service. And I can remember the moderator of the Church of Scotland taking the service there, and that was his theme, that God didn't cause this to happen. It was caused by men, but he was in the middle of it, trying to help, and helping the people that are bringing the help to it, and all that sort of thing. But I always think, I always thought that he has led Olive and I. He brought us together. And when I look back, I can think over the war years, and before the war years, how I was brought to do... I've only been a minister for... 22 years. Ordained 21 years. So you can see how late in life I came. But I can look back over my life, and I can say, yes, that was meant to be. That was meant to be. That was meant to be. You see, Olive came to me just as my first wife was dying. She was meant to come to me, and she'll tell you the same thing. And we've had a wonderful ministry since, most of it in Scotland, because she is Scottish, but it's changed my life. Anyway, I mustn't